Welcome to the ECCDC podcast, where we explore fresh ideas and impactful practices in early learning and childcare. I'm your host, Katie Lynn Parkinson. And today I am thrilled to be joined by Carla Ward, who joins us with over 19 years of experience in early childhood education. Carla brings her expertise and enthusiasm to everything she does. As the founder of Early Learning Foundations and host of the Everything ECE podcast, she's on a mission to empower educators and elevate teaching to one of the most respected professions in the world. Certified in wonder-based education, Carla infuses curiosity and connection into her work. She also runs the ECE Latte Lounge, a vibrant membership community where educators can connect, grow, and find inspiration. Whether she's leading workshops, hosting coffee chats, or dropping wisdom on her podcast, Carla keeps it real, relatable, and fun. And today, Carla shares her expertise on creating yes spaces. These are spaces that encourage exploration, growth, and discovery while respecting boundaries and fostering agency. You'll hear her share some practical advice on balancing children's needs with program goals, how to support agency, and encouraging risky play in safe and empowering ways. Let's dive right on in. All right. So I am sitting here with Carla Ward, and I am so excited to be back face-to-face virtually having some conversations with you. Welcome, Carla.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today.
So before we get started, let's do a speed round, 1 minute or less. Who is Carla Ward?
All right. So I'm an early childhood educator. I live, breathe, and bleed early childhood education. I'm the owner and founder of Early Learning Foundations, the host of the Everything ECE podcast, and the owner of the ECE Latte Lounge, a membership for early childhood educators. And that, like I said, I basically breathe, bleed, and live, breathe, and bleed early childhood education. That is me in a nutshell.
What we're talking about today is those yes spaces. And you, like me, breathe ECE. And my colleague and I always have this fun game of what we play when we're on our road trips of, if you could design a perfect space, what would it look like? And you're at the ECCDC later this month talking about yes spaces. So I thought, let's talk about our environment. Let's talk about what is a yes space. So what is your definition of a yes space?
So the short definition is a place for yes. But the deeper one is a space where children can move around their environment with no limitations. And this benefits not only the children, but I really, really encourage educators to lean into yes spaces because it will actually change their relationship, not only with the children, but it will actually change their relationship with their job. It's no secret that early childhood education is hard. It is not for the weak. We know that. But one thing, or how I came to discover yes spaces, is I brought in a yes space to my classroom. And I fell back in love with education. I've been ECE for 20 years. And, you know, I've been on that brink of burnout. I've been burnt out. And I've come back from it and still fallen in love with my classroom and my students. And yes spaces build connection, which we all need in life.
I love that. They build connection. If someone is brand new to the field, you've been in it for a while, I've been in it for a while, they're walking into a program and they want to create a yes space. What do you think that they should be focusing on when they are designing that environment space?
So the first step is observation. We can't change anything. We can't alter anything without first A, observing what's already happening in the environment. Where are we as educators saying no to children? And I always like to preface with, it doesn't necessarily mean you say the word no. It's where are you saying walking feet, gentle hands? Where are you finding yourself correcting behavior or redirecting behavior? So looking at our behavior first, looking at where we are redirecting or correcting, and then asking ourselves, can we change this? So if we've got children that are climbing on furniture, what does that mean? What is their behavior telling us? Because behavior is a form of communication. So do I need to add some more gross motor into my program? But if you're brand new, like you are fresh out of school, the first area I always say to start with for embracing yes is your block center. Blocks, blocks, and more blocks. You cannot go wrong with blocks because they're open-ended. Children's imagination comes alive. Other than restricting how high a child builds it, there isn't a lot of no for you as the educator. And it brings in so much connection and collaboration and socialization with the children in your program as well.
That's so interesting that you start blocks first. I love that as a tip of like, this is where you can be very open-ended. There's not necessarily a lot of limits, not a lot of rules. One of the practices that we do is, I'm hearing you say it too, is like hot dotting. So as you go throughout your day, where are you feeling challenged? And you have your layout of your program and like dot where you're seeing that happen. And then what can we do? So if you're saying no, 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 no a lot, well, where is that? Yes. So flipping that script. And I think that's a lot of thinking positively and bringing that positivity back into you and your program, and probably lifts a lot of stress off your shoulders too, to think about like, this is a good thing and I feel comfortable with this.
100%. And there's an element where we don't even realize that we're trying to control another human being when we keep saying no. And there becomes this hierarchy where it's, I always phrase the scene from Matilda, I'm big, you're small, I'm smart, you're dumb. Like it, essentially when we get into this battle of you can do this, but you can't do this, we're restricting where they can go in an environment that's supposed to be for them.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not fair. They have so little control over their lives as it is. The childcare space should not be a space where they have to relinquish more control in their lives. And we shouldn't be trying to control another human being. Guide them, yes. Control them, no.
The co-space, we're all there together. Let's create it together.
Absolutely.
How might you approach designing a space where you have to think about balancing things like language or math or gross development, and you have to have all of these different areas within your program?
I love this question so much because as somebody who started out as a theme-based educator with, you know, you could walk into my room and you knew that our theme was pirates or our theme was pumpkins, it was a really hard transition to move into play-based and then move into yes spaces. But again, looking at your environment, what kind of provocations or invitations can you put out on tables that will encourage conversation around math, around literacy? I'm going to flip over to gross motor for a second. Can you add balance beams? I saw one classroom who put a pull-up bar in the doorway.
That's so cool.
Right? And I never thought to do it. And unfortunately, I haven't had the opportunity to be in a classroom to try it out. But it was incredible to watch children just walk past this bar. Now, granted, they were able to have their classroom door open. They didn't have any runners. But, you know, a kid would walk by and he'd just do like 5 pull-ups. And then he'd just go back to doing what he was doing. But he exerted that energy that was building up and just moved on. It was really, really neat to see. But then also, okay, so you design a yes space, the children can move freely throughout your space. You've set up provocations, you know, that are letters. Maybe you've got the chicka chicka boom boom tree. But that doesn't mean that you are useless in your classroom. You are a very, very important tool within the classroom as the educator. So I'm going to use blocks, for example, making sure that you're present on the carpet, having a conversation with children, saying, oh, I have 3 blocks. Could you give me 2 more? Now we have how many blocks? So incorporating math and language into play.
I think that's such a great answer because I think that traditionally speaking, you had this is the math area, this is the science area, this is the learning for numbers area. None of that happens all by itself. You're not only learning numbers when you're sitting down and looking at a book. You're learning about self-regulation and waiting your turn and those fine motor skills when you're flipping the book over. You're learning how to interact with others. When you're in the block area, you're stacking them together in that hand-eye coordination. You're using big body movements, little body movements, labeling things, introducing new juicy words. So I'm loving the trend of seeing that learning happening throughout the program. And you yourself are that guide, that facilitator who can take all of those different pieces and prompt some of that investigation and prompt that learning and be able to label what is happening without having to say, this is the learning that's happening because I said so.
Exactly. And not forgetting that a yes space, or maybe for some people they don't know this, a yes space brings in our four foundations of how does learning happen. And learning can't happen without belonging, well-being, expression, engagement. So you can have, and I cringe to say this word, you can have a math worksheet, but that worksheet means absolutely nothing to that child. They will walk away not being any smarter than they were at the beginning of the worksheet if they don't feel like they belong in your program, if they don't feel they have autonomy, if they don't have expression. But if you work on the four foundations and build that connection, now when you're having a conversation about numbers, placements, any of that, now it's going to sink in because that child feels like they belong and they're ready to receive the information.
Absolutely. I think I love this conversation. It brings me right into my next question too, because you mentioned having that pull-up bar in the doorway, and I imagine someone else coming in and saying, "Ooh, I'm not sure about that." I picture someone running out. I picture it falling. Having a balance beam or that gross motor makes me feel uncomfortable. We have a different perspective of what yes means. If you were in the situation, what might you or how might you navigate that conversation in order to kind of help align some of those different perspectives?
And this is such a great question and a tough question to answer, and also a tough position to be in because research says that there, and we're going to talk a little bit more about risky play in a bit, I know, but there is an element of risk that has to happen in order for growth to happen. But we have to be A, open to a person's concerns. We have to be, because maybe they've seen something that terrified them. I know that my second week of placement, I had a toddler choke in my classroom. First placement ever. I did
Goodness.
not want to work in the toddler room. That was it for me. Like, I was like, absolutely not. Now, of course, I think toddlers are just the sweetest, but I've seen children cut the tip of their fingers off because they were playing around with scissors. Thankfully, I was experienced enough down the road that that didn't prevent me from having scissors open in my classroom. But I know from my co-teacher, the immediate reaction was, we have to remove the scissors. That can't happen because that's scary. Because at the end of the day, we want to give children autonomy, but our number one job is to keep them safe. So it's important to have the conversation about what are you worried about? Can we try it? Let's see. Or meeting a common ground. So, perfect example, the pull-up bar. Having the door open to the hallway, right? So, how can we meet a compromise when we have the pull-up bar up? Instead of having it all the time, we just have it up during free playtime and one of us are placed near the door, right? Because what you don't want to do is remove the pull-up bar altogether, because all you're going to see is an increase in behaviors, because behavior is a form of communication. And if it's been pouring for 9 days straight and the children haven't been outside, they're going to need to find a way to get those gross motor skills out.
It's working together as a team, that communication, being curious of where that perspective comes from, and open to if someone has that back experience of something really dangerous or scary happened to me, respecting that experience and saying, okay, well, where can we meet? What am I seeing in the classroom? If we have this out, we might see something different. Can we give it a try? And if we can, where is that yes between us even? So maybe that yes environment or that yes co-working? I don't
Yeah,
know.
it's a hard one, and you do have to be on the same page, because what you don't want to happen is, let's say somebody does nick themselves with a set of scissors. The last thing you want is a co-teacher A saying, "I told you so," right? Because nobody wants to be in that position. That's not a team approach. You want to make sure that you are both comfortable on the compromise. So even if your co-teacher says, "Okay, fine, we can have the scissors out all the time," make sure that they really are comfortable. Maybe you have to send them a couple of articles or YouTube, or sign them up for the workshop happening at the end of January, where we talk more deeply about yes spaces and encourage them to ask questions. Because could something happen? Absolutely. Do we want it to happen? Of course not. So how do we navigate it together as a team?
Absolutely. And I think also speaking of alignment, thinking about aligning those perspectives, this kind of it reminds me of those limits in children learning about their physical and emotional limits. So how do we align our environments to think about those limits as well?
It's so hard. If you Google the word autonomy and you go to images, and actually I shared this image at our workshop on the 31st, is there's a person and there's scissors being cut, they're cutting their puppet strings. And we have to back off a little bit and cut the puppet strings and allow children to discover their limits a little bit within safety. Because I remember as a child, I thought I was Tinkerbell when I think I was 3, and I jumped off a playhouse. Thank goodness I didn't break anything, but I learned my limit. I couldn't fly. But thank goodness it wasn't any higher, because that could have been very, very dangerous. So there are limits. I think, let me back up a second. We limit when safety is a concern, but we have to ask ourselves, what's the safety concern? So escaping, absolutely. Running into traffic, absolutely. Breaking a limb or worse, absolutely. Major safety concerns, that's a hard stop. But I think about tree logs. I have had many a discussion with team members where they felt that the tree logs were not safe for children to balance on. But what's interesting, when we give children an opportunity to balance, the only way they're going to improve is if they actually try to balance. So I encourage people to always avoid the words "be careful," because what does that actually mean? Right? All that instills is a fear. But instead, you say, "Is your whole foot on the tree log?" So if they're climbing up a rung, like a ladder, are you holding it with both hands? So instead of saying "be careful," how can we give them the tools to be safe? Right? So, are you holding with both hands? If you can't do that, then we need to try again, either with my help or maybe later. Right? So, evaluating the safety, but also allowing children to, hold with two hands and let their foot slip off the rung, but they're still holding on with two hands, because now they know what that feeling's like. So now they know how to have that before feeling, before their foot slips off. But us constantly saving children is not building resilience. We're not helping them, and we're not doing them any good.
I think it goes back to you called yourself a guide. Like you're guiding children in discovering those limits while being there as a support so that they know when you are saying, be careful, because sometimes it slips out, be careful of what and how to be careful, and describing that feeling and what we can do with our body for themselves in a safe environment.
Absolutely.
Which limits always bring us to that topic, because you said risk, which we could debate here for a really long time and gives people that little funny feeling in their tummy of saying no risk. You're describing to me risk and limits, and yes is very important to have within your space. So how can educators design these spaces that balance that element of safety and whatever that means to you while still encouraging children to explore their boundaries?
Such a great question. And yes, like risky play is almost like in its own conversation entirely. But we have to do a couple of things. We have to look at why we're educators. Like they leave our care at, let's say, 3, 6, 5, whatever the age group, maybe it's school age. They leave our care, but they continue to grow long after they've left us. And then they become adults. And adults who don't take risks become adults who get stuck in dead-end jobs that they hate. They have a passion for something, but they're too scared to take that leap. They avoid relationships because it's scary. And so I'm going a little extreme here because we're talking about, 0 to 6 or even 0 to 12. But looking at risk as a good thing is key. But also acknowledging that risk and danger are two very different things. Risk means you might get a little hurt. Danger means you're going to get a lot hurt, if not worse. So we have to look at, is it us that's afraid? Are we trying to control a situation? Or is that child putting themselves in danger? Now, anybody who's worked in childcare knows that sometimes that's a 2-second decision that you have to make. And obviously, we want to err on the side of caution. But I always use the comparison of climbing up the slide is a risk. Jumping off a 20-foot play structure, that's dangerous. So when we are looking at our environment, so both our indoor environment and our outdoor environment, looking at our yes phase, but then also having a discussion on your non-negotiables. The roof of the play structure, that's a non-negotiable. And children are so smart. I think often we do not give them enough credit. Even toddlers, preschoolers, they understand. Preschoolers and kindergartners more so, they understand if you say to them after you've had a discussion, what's Miss Ward's first job? To keep us safe. Like my kindergartners could tell you, what's the second part? To make sure we have fun. Absolutely. We can't have fun unless we're being safe. So, you putting a chair on a ball on top of the table and trying to climb that's not safe. That's dangerous. Let's move things over. Let's turn that danger into the risk. Because again, the child's trying to communicate something, curiosity. We don't ever want to crush curiosity. But at the same time, we don't want anybody jumping off a 20-foot roof structure. That's not okay. And most of us know that. But I've heard a great quote that said, common sense is a flower that doesn't grow in everybody's garden. So we have to discuss as a team what's the non-negotiable of safety. And where's the danger? Where's the risk? Tree logs that are, an inch off the ground, that's a risk. Tree logs that are 5 feet off the ground and we're asking toddlers to go on it, that's danger. So age appropriate as well. I hope that answered the question.
It absolutely did. I think it's just like it ties it back into like what are your limits? And so thinking about if there is a safety hazard or something that the children aren't able to recognize, that would not be a part of your yes space. However, if it is something that children could have that autonomy over and make some of those decisions for themselves with your help and your guidance and explore that risk in a safe environment, why not try it out? And it's very nuanced, but it's really important for children's development to have that autonomy.
It really is because autonomy allows a child to figure out who they are. And anybody that's a people pleaser can understand that knowing who you are really helps you when you go to set those boundaries. And children are great at setting boundaries, but we as adults are great at breaking those boundaries for children. So when a child says, no, I don't want help with my shoes, well, we're trying to get outside because there's 20 other preschoolers. We break that boundary and say, no, just let me help you. Obviously, I'm using a vague example, but what happens down the road is we keep doing it, and then children just stop saying no. And then you've got people pleasers who just do what we want. And as much as we would love our room of 24 preschoolers to do what we want when we want, we're also not in the field of developing robots. That would be a horrible thing to do as educators. We want children to know who they are as individuals. And the more autonomy and the more we can say yes, the more they will have better social skills. They'll have more confidence. They'll have better boundaries. They'll have words to say, stop, I don't like that. But they'll also be in a classroom where people respect that. So, in case you can't tell, I'm a really big fan of yes spaces.
I call those choices false choices of the can we come line up at the door? And if they say no, you're stuck. So
yep.
What are those real choices?
I learned this trick when I worked at the body shop. So when I went to college, I was a part-time employee at the body shop, and they tell you, and I probably shouldn't have said where I was working, but fine. But they tell you not to say, can I help you today? They tell you to say, what are you looking for?
Mm-hmm.
And so it actually helped so much when I went into early childhood education, because I learned to be very careful where I said yes, no questions with little ones.
That's a great learning experience. Great tips.
Yeah.
Thinking about those choices and decision-making, what are some of those really practical steps that an educator can take to support children's autonomy, their agency, and their decision-making?
This one's going to make some people cringe. So just take a deep breath, receive what you can, is not limiting centers and how many children are allowed in a center at a time. It's a hard one to overcome. I was the person that for, first 10 years, only 4 kids were allowed in the dramatic center. And partially it became because, we only had 4 of this in the dramatic center. But children are amazing at finding solutions. The other practical skill, and this one's a hard one for a lot of people, especially when I say with Play-Doh, is allowing centers to cross each other. So allowing art materials to make it to the block center, a block center allowed to make it to the dramatic center. So allowing, instead of these individual centers, allowing them to cross. It's hard at first because it can be very messy. And so it can be very stressful. So you take it in stride, you ease in. The other practical skill I always like to say is please don't tell the children that you're now a yes space. It does not go well for anybody, because as much as the children might not necessarily know what that means, there is always one child, always your smart cookie, that wants to know how far they can push the yes button. Yeah. So it's just better for you to know that you have a yes environment versus saying, we're now a yes space. It's a free-for-all. It's not a free-for-all. We're still an educational environment. We want to make sure that we're keeping children safe. So I always just like to preface with, don't announce to the children that you're a yes space, because you probably are already doing a lot of it anyways.
There's always one.
Always. And they're always your smart cookies, for sure.
And I think it's so important to say, if there's a problem, gosh, there's 5 of you in the center and 5 of you don't fit. Huh, that sure is a problem. How are we going to solve it? And then they're like, all right, well, we have some ideas for you here.
And bang on, because that's exactly what happened to me. I had a tiny, tiny kindergarten classroom, hands down one of my favorite rooms to ever teach in, though. And the children, because they were engaged in play, they were like, well, just make the dramatic center bigger. Oh, yeah. How are we going to do that? Because this table is basically touching. And we landed up designing the room together to allow for a bigger dramatic center. And it worked so much better because it was collaborative and it allowed all of us to be a part of that program.
It links back to what you said too, of like, it's their space. So they are now having this greater voice in how their space is designed, what goes into that space, and what are those rules? What are those limits? What are those pieces that we're not saying yes on because of whatever reasons?
Mm-hmm.
You're now saying, okay, well, this is our room. What are our decisions together in this room? And then back to that, how does learning happen, right? This is my place. I belong here. I can express myself here. I am part of the rules. I'm not being told what to do. I'm part of that conversation, which is
Absolutely.
powerful.
So powerful. And when we do say no to something, it's going to carry more weight because we don't say it often. So, oh, if Miss Ward is saying no to this, there's a reason. Because I don't know if you know this, the average toddler hears no 400 times a day.
Wow.
Like, that is wild to me. Like,
That's a
that was
lot.
a, that's so much. And I mean, that's 24 hours a day, but I mean, taken to nap, taken to sleep, all of that, right? Like 400 times a day is insane. So, of course, they're going to tune you out because no means absolutely nothing to them because now it's just become a word that's an inconvenience to them.
Yeah.
So, we've got to hold our nose for when it is a safety to themselves, a safety concern to us, or a safety concern to others.
That's nice and simple.
Yeah.
If you were, so you're talking with the children and they say, hey, I want to make this dramatic place bigger or I want to do this. And you say, okay, let you take the lead. If we had an empty room or you had access to the storage, you could choose the resources, move the things around. What do you think the children would want in their ideal space? And how, as educators, can we incorporate those ideas?
So, I always joke that children have been telling us for years what they want, but we keep, sorry, let me rephrase that. Children have been telling us for years what they need, but we keep giving them what they want. And we've just had the Christmas holidays or the holidays, and a lot of children received gifts. And I've already heard it from at least two parents. Well, they weren't even interested in what was in the box, they were interested in the box. Children don't want, or children don't need the toys. They need the open-ended box that allows them to explore, to use it in multiple ways. So if I was to say, you know, where would you really load on things? I mentioned at the beginning, block play. Ask parents for their Amazon boxes. I don't even want to admit how many Amazon boxes have been delivered in the last 12 weeks in my house. It is insane. But put boxes in your block center, put them in a dramatic center. Switch out your pre-designed food in your dramatic center if you have a house center. Replace it with rocks, replace it with pom-poms, replace it with art materials. One, you as an educator, I mentioned at the beginning about how yes space is really, really lightens your load as an educator. I used to change my dramatic center every single Friday after work, so that there was a new dramatic center. Well, once we started doing that, I was changing it maybe every couple of weeks to a month because the rock would be, you know, a pie one day. Then the rock would be a rock another day. A rock would be something else. I mean, one time my students were like, we need to make a Starbucks. Now, it's no secret that I am a Starbucks addict, and I may have accidentally conditioned my children to love Starbucks as well. But I went to Starbucks and said, can I have some of your mugs? And they were so sweet. They even gave us aprons to borrow for the week. And so, having those discussions with your students as well about, I noticed not a lot of you are playing in the dramatic center. Any suggestions for next week? And having those conversations because it is their environment as much as it is yours. So, if an area is not being used, why?
I think you might have a answered my next question because I was going to say if you've gone through and you've designed your environment and how do you, or when do you decide, okay, it's going to evolve, it's going to change rather than remaining static? I don't know if you have anything else that you wanted to talk about for that
The only thing I would add is loose parts.
one.
Because again, adding loose parts in just elevates their ideas just that little bit more. Like I still had in my classroom, I still had, you know, the plastic dinosaurs, the cars. Like those were still very much a part of my classroom, but the blocks were the main attraction on the carpet. And then the dinosaurs were brought in for a dinosaur zoo, or the cars were brought in for a car garage. So different materials. And then the dramatic center and our block center often merged together just to go. It was the particular group that I had. They had a really big imagination. So a lot of that. So, and sponges. I always like to talk about on a budget for block play, sponges. And funny enough, one of the most popular loose parts I ever had was Allen keys from IKEA. It was the most, and I don't know what it was, but I guess because it's like dominoes, depending on how you angle the Allen key, it changed the direction of the next Allen key. And it was such an intriguing thing. Children would play with it for ages.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I would say go to Home Depot and ask them what little bits and bobs they have left over. 'Cause sometimes they'll just have one or like a small handful that's not enough to sell. And they can put them into smaller bags and donate them if you're really nice. And it's the random weird bits that
Oh,
you
yeah.
just add and sprinkle in and step back and observe to see what happens next.
Absolutely. And paint chips from Home Depot. I have left with purseful of paint chips. I hope nobody from Home Depot hears this. Because they're so great because they want to make grass, so they use the green paint chips, or they want to do trees, so they have different colored green. So absolutely, it's loose parts are messy, but just incredible to embracing the yes.
Here's the one question I was really looking forward to asking you because this is the fun question. In the future, right, you have unlimited resources, money's not an issue, like space, nothing's an issue. The most amazing classroom. What is one feature concept or material or something in the environment that you would absolutely want to include? Of Carla Ward's childcare center, here's what she has to offer you.
I wish I knew this woman's Instagram handle, and maybe I can send it to you to put in the show notes, is I would put in a movement wall. There is a woman that I have been following on Instagram who does, if she does it in childcare, she does in people's basements, but it is a rock climbing wall inside for younger children. And it goes all the way up. And honestly, when I think about my last classroom, I was like, this would be amazing over the block center because I'm obsessed with my block centers. But to have a whole wall of gross motor where the children can literally climb to the top, talk about risky play, and hanging across, like climbing monkey bars across the ceiling. I just think that would just make for such a phenomenal yes space because you really are incorporating so much gross motor, but still allowing for if you do blocks in your art center, then still allowing for fine motor. But like I keep saying, behavior is a form of communication. Well, if children can, pretend to be Indiana Jones and, climb to the top of a cliff, well, hello, next level dramatic play, right?
That would be amazing. Oh my gosh. I can imagine how much fun the children would have, but also the challenge of how far up can you go and
Yeah.
swinging across the top and how you can
Oh yeah.
incorporate that into all the rest of the pieces of your program too.
Oh yeah. I just think it would take early childhood to a whole nother level.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to be thinking about that and all of these different other yes spaces and going into these programs. And I'm going to try to figure out how we can get you a rock wall and how we can get everyone on board for saying yes to that too.
Yes, love it. I'm happy to start a petition for the ministry.
It has been so wonderful sitting down and talking to you. And just before we wrap up the call, I wanted to kind of open it up to you to see, is there any final tips or reflections when it comes to making those meaningful learning yes spaces?
I would just say give yourself grace because I've been at this 20 years. It took me 10 to even discover yes spaces and embrace yes spaces. So when you go into your classroom, don't suddenly be like, oh my gosh, it's a mess. There's too many no's. Give yourself grace, ease in. Just start with one area. If this is new to you, like I said, start with the blocks and then observe, reflect. Reflection is your friend. It honestly is. And those tiny little changes, you'll fall in love with them because you'll see the results. Even tiny little changes, you'll see the results and you will fall in love with them. So give yourself grace and ease in. That is my best advice.
I mean, that's perfect. That's wonderful advice. And I think we're going to be living with that into the new year of 2025. Start slow, reflect, take it easy on yourself.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Carla, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's always so much fun chatting with you.
It has been an absolute pleasure exploring Yes Spaces with Carla Ward. From fostering children's agency to designing environments that grow with them, Carla reminded us of the incredible impact thoughtful spaces can have on children's development and on educators too. If today's episode has inspired you, don't miss your chance to dive deeper with Carla's upcoming training session, Designing Yes Spaces, Embrace the Yes and Design a Space for Children. In this interactive session, Carla's going to guide us through creating innovative early learning environments that encourage children to discover who they are, to embrace autonomy and respect boundaries. Join us on Thursday, January 30th from 6:30 to 8:30 for this experience. Head over to the ECCDC website at eccdc.org to register and secure your spot today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave a comment, share it with your colleagues. Let's keep this conversation going. Connect with us on social media or visit the ECCDC website for more resources. Until next time, remember, every yes you say to children's potential creates a world of possibilities. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon on the ECCDC podcast.